Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The 2015 edition of Hillside Inside takes place February 6th to 8th in various venues in downtown Guelph. Now, while Saturday's show with the new pornographers and operators and Sunday's show featuring Stars and Hey Rosetta are both sold out, you can still get tickets for other stuff, like Friday's Oliver Mutacuzzi and the Black Spirits River Run Center show with Alex Cuba, or the Kid Koala Bad Bad Not Good Bizarre show at Mitchell Hall. There are also still tickets left for the Owen Pallett Jennifer Castle show at St. George's Church Sanctuary Saturday afternoon. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff happening in stores and restaurants and cafes over the weekend. So head over to hillsidefestival.ca for updates and more info.
Creative Control with Beesh Khanna.
Hello, it's a little late, and I should be going to bed, because sleep is at a premium around here. So I'm going to try to make this relatively short. Before I tell you about what's happening on this episode, I want to mention that the next installment of Long Winter, which is a festival that I'm involved in organizing, I also present the Long Night with Beesh Khanna talk show there, which some of you may have heard an episode. I tried to present one here on this podcast a couple weeks ago. Anyway, our next installment of Long Winter is the Long Winter Fair, occurring on February 13th in Toronto. Basically, the corner of Queen and Dovercourt is the hub. We're doing stuff on the street on Dovercourt Road there. We're doing stuff at the Great Hall. We're doing stuff at 99 Sudbury. We're doing stuff at the Theatre Centre. It's all ages. There's lots of stuff happening, and I urge you to go to torontolongwinter.com to find out more stuff about, it's too much. I can't tell you everything that's happening. I will tell you that on the next installment of my talk show, here's what's coming up. Jesse Brown of Canada Land will be a guest. Susan Fast, the author of a new 33 and a third book called Michael Jackson's Dangerous, will be joining me. Stand-up comedian David Hetty, who's been on this show, he's going to be on. And a great musician, Lisa Conway, is going to perform. So that's the Long Night with Beesh Khanna show happening at the Great Hall. Probably at 8:30 or 9 or 8, I don't know. We have to figure this out. TorontoLongWinter.com for more information. Now, this episode of the show features Colin Hubert, a.k.a. Siskiyou. There's a new Siskiyou album. It's a bit different than some of the other Siskiyou music you may have heard if you're familiar with this project. Colin is someone I met many years ago when he was in Great Lake Swimmers. My band I was in helped set up the first Great Lake Swimmers show in Guelph, and then joining the Great Lake Swimmers on this little tour was this band, Ten Year Drought. I think they were called 10 Year Drought, and Colin was in that band, so we met and sort of see each other fleetingly. He moved to Vancouver, so I don't see him as much. Anyway, he started this band, Siskiyou. I'm a fan, and the new record's great. It's out now via Constellation, and you'll hear part of a song and then an entire song on this episode. And it's a revealing, occasionally heartbreaking chat with Colin. He's going through some health stuff and his life has been altered, and it's frightening, frankly, that stuff like this can happen. So listen to this. It's a good one. This week, the Bookshelf Cinema is screening Mr. Turner, Ida, The Theory of Everything, Wild, and More. On February 7th, Tim Tencher reads from his new book, Picture Your Life to Create a Healthy Mind and Soul, in the bookstore. That's happening in the bookstore. And then on February 13th and 14th, the E-Bar presents The Cock Whisperer, A Love Story. The Bookshelf is an independently owned culture hub located at 41 Quebec Street in Guelph. More information about their hours, listings, blogs, and accessibility, please visit bookshelf.ca.
I love you.
Siskiyou is the musical moniker of Colin Hubert, a gifted and evocative songwriter who lives in British Columbia. With his previous two albums, Hubert emerged as a haunting and deeply emotive voice in subversive folk music, unafraid to house pretty melodies and hopeful lyrical notions in somewhat surreal and unusual musical packages. The new Siskiyou album is somehow more forceful than any before it. It was born of physical pain and mental anguish, and that shapes one of the most riveting albums of the year. Siskiyou's latest record is called Nervous. It's out now via Constellation Records. And here to discuss it further is Colin Hubert. Hello, Colin. How are you?
Hey, Vish. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Now, where are you precisely?
I am in Vancouver, in a garage, in East Vancouver specifically.
Oh, East Van. That's a...
Yeah, to be very specific, yeah. I'm almost no longer in Vancouver. I'm right at the edge of Burnaby in Vancouver, so...
Are you near the... Tomahawk restaurant?
That's in North Vancouver.
Oh, north. So, right.
Kind of generally speaking, yeah, I am. I'm just across the water, but yeah, that's in a kind of different municipality, I suppose.
Okay, that's north. You're east. Okay, sometimes I get confused. I thought that was east.
I've never been to the Tomahawk though, because I'm a vegetarian. Although I know of it, I just have never been there to eat. So
yeah, I went with Nardwar. He took me there.
Oh, seriously? That's yeah. I feel like doesn't he take quite a few people there, like as a habit of his, I suppose, or no?
Maybe. I mean, I had a show at one point where I actually had breakfast with people, and I was in Vancouver, so I made a point of meeting with Nardwar, and yeah, he ordered, yeah, you're right, there wasn't, I mean, I think I eat some eggs, so I had I think I had something, but there wasn't a lot for me to eat at the time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, that sounds like that would have been probably a pretty interesting breakfast.
It was. Did you come across Nardwar ever in your travels?
I have never met Nardwar, no. But I know, I know people who know him. You know what I mean? But yeah, I haven't met him personally. I've never even really seen him, to be honest. Like, even though I live in the same city and have for quite some time. Yeah.
You would think that if you were going to see anyone, it'd be... I feel like we could spot Nardwar from space.
Yeah, like you're not going to miss him if you're walking down the street. But maybe if he wasn't in his full kind of regalia, maybe, he would be unrecognizable. When you went and saw him or had breakfast with him, was he in the full getup kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. He was.
So I don't know what he looks like out of character. So
I wonder, do you have interest in speaking with Nardwar about Siskiyou?
Maybe. I'm not sure. Yeah, sure. Why not? why do you have him right there with you?
No, but I know him a little bit. I could probably make it happen if you really wanted it to. I think it might be interesting.
Yeah, it could be actually pretty interesting, to be honest. So yep. Maybe let's try and set that up in the future, maybe.
All right, you'll have to go to the Tomahawk, I think. That'll be the condition of the interview, maybe. Now, I mentioned in the intro that there's some health issues that contextualize this record. Can you speak to those? I didn't give too much away, and I don't want to speak on your behalf. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to go into too many of the gory details, but I just, yeah, like a few years ago, I flew with a cold to go on tour overseas, and I just kind of a bunch of weird symptoms, mostly in my ears, and my face, that made it kind of difficult to, I don't know, relax and to kind of feel like the person I was before. Kind of just, they popped up one by one over the course of 3 or 4 months, like loud ringing in the ears and sensitivity to sound and all kinds of weird emotional stuff that goes with that. And yeah, and then I got back and they just kind of worsened, and no doctor has really been able to tell me what's wrong with it. So it's kind of been one of these weird things where, you grow up and you always think, even if you have something wrong with you, that it, at least someone will be able to tell you what it is, even if they can't help you, that would give you some relief. But when someone can't tell you what's actually wrong with you or how to fix it, it becomes a kind of stressful, can become a kind of stressful event for a certain type of person, I think,
And how debilitating was this for you in your work?
Well, I think it's pretty hard in terms of live performance. Because you can never really control the environment. And so if the monitors blow up or the monitor feeds back, or if you have a bad sound person on any particular night or whatever it is, it could be pretty pretty devastating, I think, to me and my kind of sense of sound and hearing and that kind of stuff. So in a controlled environment like a studio, it's not really a problem, actually, to be honest, because you can kind of set your levels and, to as loud or as quiet as you want it, because you're usually kind of isolated in a little room, right, away from the drummer or the whatever. So it affects the live performance and, but that's probably about it. But that's a big part of music, I suppose, too, right?
Is it a situation where your hearing, your ability to hear has been dulled, or are you constantly hearing ringing?
Well, yeah, it's like a loud ring, but it fluctuates really wildly. And my ears are always popping. You know how when you're on a plane, how you can feel the inside of your ears quite a bit, especially if you have a cold.
Yeah.
I kind of have kind of a situation in that certain sounds that don't even have to be that loud will cause that same physical kind of distortion in my ears. Hmm. So it's, you know, it makes it a little bit stressful, like regular everyday life. I think if I was a more relaxed person, you know, then if I was a different kind of person, then it probably wouldn't bother me, you know, as much. So I'm certainly partly to blame. And there's, to be truth be told, there's part of me that sometimes wonders how much of it I just didn't create of my own kind of anxious person. You know what I mean? That I, over time, you can create your own kind of mental weirdness if you dwell on things for too long. You know what I mean?
You suspect this may be psychosomatic?
Well, I mean, eventually, I think when you run out of reasons why things are happening, you start to look, I think, a little bit more inward to see if there isn't something that you did, or something that you are, or something you haven't been, you know, paying attention to on a conscious level that maybe creates some kind of physical symptoms. You know, I haven't really discovered it yet, but I'm certainly constantly kind of searching it out, I suppose. You know what I mean? So
have you had any, so first of all, you and I would have met, God, 10 years ago or something. At some point you were in the Great Lakes Swimmers, right?
Yeah. The first time I met you, actually, and I don't know if we really formally met, but I think we met at Ed's Video in Guelph, and I was playing in a band called 10 Year Drought, and you were playing in a band playing drums, and Great Lakes Swimmers was playing as well. But that was before I actually played in the band Great Lakes Swimmers.
Yeah, it was a weird, it was an afternoon, it was a Sunday afternoon, early evening show. We decided that the date didn't make sense, or the only date that made sense for this show was a Sunday. So we decided, well, Sunday's an off night in this town. We'll do an early show, and then people won't have an excuse about it being too late. And it sort of worked.
Yeah, it was a fun show. It was like, that was the first time I think I met the Great Lakes Swimmers folks. And so we were going on a little short tour after that. And so it was kind of, you know, this first moment when two bands go on tour, I don't know if you've experienced it, where they, you know, they're kind of sussing each other out and getting to know each other and like wondering and worrying, like, what's this going to be like, kind of thing. So it's always kind of a bit of an awkward thing the first night when I think two bands are going on tour play together. So,
but it was, that was a fun show. And then you subsequently, so 10 Year Drought, was that one of your first bands?
Yeah, I just played drums in them. And then we went on tour, and I think I ended up playing drums. I think Tony's like whole band bailed on him or something, like the day before they were going on that tour. And so it was just him by himself, and so I played drums for a few shows by the end, and then eventually they just kind of needed someone to play drums, and that's kind of how I filled in that role for a few years there.
Right, so you were in the band for a few years, and then I seem to recall hearing that you may have suffered some other health issues that precluded you from continuing on, or was it just...
No. I had moved out to Vancouver, you know, in the middle of all that. And so it just kind of didn't make sense to be playing in a band that was, you know, in Toronto when you were on the other side of the country. You know what I mean? So,
okay. So
that was a big part of it. Logistics.
You were living in Windsor, Ontario?
No, I was living in Toronto at the time, so was Tony and other people that were playing in that band. And then it just so happened that I was moving to Vancouver I'd already made plans to move out west, kind of, you know, as I was starting to play with Great Lakes Swimmers. And so I followed through with those plans, and then I ended up in Vancouver. And we still played together for a little while, you know what I mean? But it just... eventually just didn't make as much sense logistically, I don't think, so.
And did you, the Great Lakes Swimmers sort of ascended in terms of their busyness and well, their status, their profile. The band got bigger. Did you regret the decision not to be part of it anymore?
I don't think so. I think that, you know, that popularity, it just means that you're touring a lot more, I think, on a lot of levels, at least in the role that I was performing in that group. It just would have been meant a lot more touring, which I had already done quite a bit of, and in the end I'm not the biggest fan of, you know what I mean? So maybe there was a bit of regret, but not so much, you know, because to be on the road 9 or 10 months of the year is not the most enjoyable experience. So
But it was a pretty crack band when you were, I mean, Sandro Perry was in the band at one point. Were you in the band with him?
Yeah, I played with Sandro quite a bit, actually. Yeah, so, and Eric, and there's a guy named, yeah, there's a whole group of people rotating cast, I think, for the most part. But yeah. Yeah, that was definitely a fun time for sure.
Yeah, so. Like that was an amazing version of that band, I thought. And then as it got a little more, I mean, I think Tony's music is still really weird, but I think it just got more conventional on some level.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely, it did. Yeah. that was a fun couple records to make, and it was always kind of an adventure to make those records because it was never really, I think now they make records a little bit more in proper kind of studio settings, but at that time it was always kind of like, you know, at some church or some weird location somewhere. So that was always kind of a fun time. So.
Speaking of fun times, did you just get a text?
I did, yeah. So it's my wife asking me what groceries I think she should get.
Oh, what are you going to recommend?
I think mandarin oranges. I'm kind of addicted, even though the season's over now that, you know, the Christmas time is over. But I'd never really gotten into mandarin oranges like ever in my life as a kind of Christmas tradition, which I think it is kind of a Christmas tradition.
Yeah, and my wife's big into them.
Yeah, and so I got turned on to them this year, and it's like it was like I was smoking cigarettes. Like I had like a $10 a day mandarin orange habit, and I can't really replace it with anything because it's like big oranges, they're too hard to peel, and by the time you've eaten it, you're covered in stickiness, you know. Whereas with the mandarin oranges, it's a clean, concise, delicious experience. So I'm kind of at the dregs of the season here. So I'm just whatever, any port in the storm. So
I like navel oranges.
Yeah. See, I guess I'm not too versed in all of the different kinds of oranges. So maybe that's a place to go to try and, you know, fill that hole once it finally, the season's over. So
a navel orange, a good navel orange is like, they're fairly gigantic, but if it's good, it's incredibly juicy and delicious and sweet.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that sounds great. I mean, there's something, a kind of oral fixation to the mandarin orange though too, right? Cause it's so small.
I guess so. Yeah.
Like eating candy on some level, you know what I mean? So
I feel like you should respond to your wife's text and just say, you know what, honey, forget the groceries. We're going to the Tomahawk.
You know what? I don't want to try to text her because I'll probably shut down this conversation.
Right. Like, right.
Because I don't know. I don't know the intricacies of this telephone and face and all the different things we have going on here to make this happen. So
it is a bit intricate, and I appreciate your patience with this new technology. Now, we were talking about the Great Lakes Swimmers and you're leaving the band and how you don't like touring necessarily because you've done a bunch of it. You've come across in the past and in your music a little bit as someone who is, and you've mentioned this, you've been open about your anxiety. You seem a little high strung. I feel like some of your music it kind of reflects that tension between emotional normalcy and chaos. I'm just curious how this works for you as a musician. I mean, is a lot of what we're hearing reflective of you and your personality?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I would say the songs are on some level autobiographical. I think that's fairly obvious, I think. So, but yeah, definitely. I think that I'm definitely an anxious person. It's something I think I'd try to, you know, I would like to not be, but, you know, and I work to not be, but at the same time, it's hard to not be who you are. So, but as far as music goes, I feel like it helps in terms of making music, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes you pay attention to details a little bit more, maybe, and not really settle too much for things. I don't think it makes for a good live performance, though. You know what I mean? Like, nobody wants to see some, like, uptight, kind of nervous wreck, you know, playing guitar for them. I found the hard way.
Are you not not playing live at all?
Well, we might go over and do a tour overseas if it makes sense. It's kind of like we're not really, this is not like a band that we like play shows around town all the time. Just people live in different places, and you know, I don't know, live, I just playing live is not, I like playing drums, actually, to be honest. Like, if I could just play drums, that's something I feel really comfortable doing live. Playing guitar, singing, having to come up with the witty banter, that's a whole nother skill set that I don't think I have mastered, you know what I mean? And it's like, I'm not really that good of a guitar player, so I'm always thinking about what's going on with my hands, whereas I felt I was a fairly good drummer, and so I didn't have to think about it. Like, I could just feel it, you know what I mean? So we don't really play too many shows. So, and it's a lot of work to get, when you don't really just rehearse weekly or anything like that, to get the whole machine up and running, especially when the songs are kind of fairly intricate and complex. You know, it's like, you want to have, like, you know, a couple weeks of shows booked before you go and put all that work into getting a good live show up and running, right? So we might do a tour. It's kind of, we're looking into it for the spring or the summer, I guess, overseas. And if it makes sense, then yeah, we'll probably get everything going and start rehearsing and all that kind of stuff. So
it's interesting to me that you, for someone suffering from this hearing condition, this condition with your hearing rather, and that you gravitate towards the drums among the loudest instruments.
Yeah, but I was never really that loud of a drummer. And, you know, if I'm recording, I'll wear headphones. Like, I just think, like, it's not that I gravitated to it because of its volume or intensity. It's more just that I feel very natural playing drums because I've played drums since I was like a teenager. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't have to think about it. And there's something so beautiful about something you don't have to think about when you're doing it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so that's more of what it would be. It could be a completely different situation. You're right. In the reality of my current life, maybe playing drums in a band would not be as ideal. But on some kind of, you know, fantasy level, then it seems pretty ideal to me. Even though I've done it before and I know what it's like, you know what I mean? So, but sometimes you need to go through a whole process of things to come back to realize that, holy crap, you know, I actually kind of like just playing the drums. So
I like playing the drums. I miss playing the drums. I do play the drums still, I guess, but I love playing the drums. The drums.
Do you play in a band at all? Because I remember you were pretty, like, pretty serious drummer when I at that Ed video show. I remember you kind of ripping it up. So.
Oh, well, thank you. Here and there, I'm playing here and there. I think there was a point where I literally was in five bands at the same time. You know, classic smaller town situation. And then.
Yeah.
Now I'm, you know, I got two kids and I'm playing when I can, kind of thing. I miss it. I always enjoy doing it. It's the full body workout. It's very satisfying.
Yeah. And, you know, as a drummer too, you don't have to really worry about, like, writing a set list, you know, like all the details. You just need to get out there and rock. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
there's not as much.
I'm kind of the bossy drummer.
Oh, you're the details guy. Okay, so then maybe that's a bit different then. So I don't know.
Yeah, I am the details guy. I think that's fair to say. Yeah, it's interesting. Now, a couple of people that I've spoken to and things I've read and in my own interpretation of the band, in terms of following the band, this new record seems more fleshed out. More layered in terms of instrumentation. It's funny to me that you went again. I don't mean to keep harkening back to this health issue, but it's funny to me that you got noisier or at least this record is noisier than previous ones, given what you were going through. Can you speak to how the sound and the sonic template of this record reflects what you've been going through, and then within that, even the content of these songs?
Well, I mean, I think as far as the way the record turned out, I think the production value, I think, is a little higher because I made the other two records on my own, just kind of, you know, at my apartment or here and there. And those two records, like, I didn't put much time or thought, relatively speaking, into the writing of songs. Like, it just kind of, they came out, and half the time, you know, I record little demos of them, and those demos would actually turn into the songs on the record. So there was a kind of level of spontaneity to that songwriting and not a lot of consideration in terms of, like, what those songs were. And so it had a kind of, I felt those songs had a bit of a charm. And so I don't know, I just didn't really want to do the same thing on this record. I wanted to see, you know, what would happen if I put a little bit more elbow grease into the process of like actually writing songs, I suppose. Like that once you had the idea that you went in and you didn't just stop at a good idea, but you pushed it a little bit further to the next kind of level. And so, and you know, I had a lot of time on my hands too, because when the whole stuff with my ears happened, I kind of shut, you know, because I was originally, we were going to make the record as a band and kind of rehearse it as a band and, you know, work the songs out in that form. But once my ears kind of blew up like that, I just kind of waited around for them to get better. And when they ended up not getting better after a certain point, you just like, I just started doing demos at home on my 8-track cassette recorder and just went from there, you know? And I wanted to see what happened if I worked harder at writing songs. And then the production value, which I think is higher, we had more money to make the record, because not because we sold a lot of records, but of our previous records, but really just because we had some more funding from, you know, arts organizations. So, mm-hmm. you know, and I, you know, so we figured we would go into an actual studio and make it with someone who knew what they were doing. You know what I mean? So I think that's kind of what happened with that. And then, you know, as you make more, you write complex songs, you know, sometimes it requires a lot of instrumentation to keep it moving, you know what I mean? And keep it interesting, I suppose. So.
Okay. So it was a bit of an experiment for you in terms of the instrumentation, but I mean, you said something about figuring out ways to push things further. And I wonder how that mentality rubs up against more pop oriented songwriting. Cause I think on some level, this is also, it's weird. It's a denser record for you on some level, on a few different levels, content-wise, musically, but it's also, in some ways, your most infectious. It's like it's the most pop structures that I think I've heard you employ. Does that ring true for you?
Yeah, I think so. I kind of was trying to like not have any filler on the record, you know what I mean, as well. So, whereas I feel like in the past, there's been filler, but there's been songs that have been more meditative or something like that. You know what I mean? Whereas this one, I wanted to, it wasn't intentional.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I wasn't intentionally trying to write a pop song. Like all of those parts just came out as they came out. And, you know, maybe I worked on the lyrics and how to put them all together, you know, as they ended up. But yeah, it wasn't a concerted effort to write a pop record, by no means. Yeah.
But you acknowledge that you could see how this is arguably your most accessible record.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, no, and it is, I would say it is definitely more accessible, but also because of the production value, right? It's not as like weird and lo-fi, I suppose, as the other ones.
Yeah, so. That's also true. Now I'm trying to figure out a way to frame this as delicately as I can without seeming prurient or insensitive, but within this recognition and, you know, within suffering from this ailment,
yeah,
has there been madness? Has there been a kind of a confusion? Because I hear things like in certain Violent Motion Pictures, there's references to sort of the devil on your shoulder. I hear like voices in your head coming through. Did you feel yourself like you were haunted as you were trying to grapple with what you were going through?
Yes, I think so. I think that you kind of like nailed that one a little bit. Yeah, like I felt like I was changing as a human being. You know what I mean? Like the way I saw the world, the way I saw myself, that all got completely oriented on me and without me agreeing to it. You know what I mean? And it was a tough thing to take. And you had to ask, like, who are you? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And, you know, what the hell am I doing now? As the, you know, the actual physicality of your sensory experience changed on you. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, I definitely felt a little bit confused about, you know, because you take things for granted. You take for granted that, like, you know, that your senses and your ability to do and experience things is going to kind of remain constant, or at least remain constant until a very old age. And when that changes at a relatively young or middle age, you know, that can kind of shock you, because you weren't expecting that. You weren't planning for that. You know what I mean? So
I can't handle. I cannot handle any ear interference of any kind. Like, if I go to a doctor and they're like, "Oh, you got a little wax in your ear," and they do that thing where they pump the water in your ear, and if the water doesn't drain, I have a borderline panic attack.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what it turned into, right? It was like panic attacks and things like that after a while, right? And so, and then, you know, once you start in on panic attacks, then you move into all kinds of different thoughts, because you're seeing your body, or at least when I experience panic attacks, I see my body stops functioning in a logical way, right? It's like, it's just fear, like, just like, you just feel fear, the chemical fear. Mm. And when you, you know, but even though there's nothing to be afraid of, right? And that's just such a crazy experience, when your body is producing chemicals that make you just want to run away, but there's nothing to run away from. Like, then you start to see yourself as just, you know, as a set of chemicals and molecules, as opposed to like, hey, I'm Colin. You know what I mean? It's like, you're no longer Colin. You're just chemicals that have kind of gotten, you know, mixed the wrong way at this particular time.
Well, so, and to call back to that discussion about whether or not this might be psychosomatic, I imagine you were partially, there was some element of sort of self-blame. You flew when you had a cold, and you're like, oh, were you retracing your steps and thinking, my God, I could have prevented this.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was like so much. Yeah, totally. Like, and, you know, it's one of these things where you learn this all in retrospect, you know, in hindsight, you're like, well, I'm never going to do that again, you know, and like, and I'm never going to, you know, I'm not going to put myself in jeopardy just, you know, because there's a lot of people depending on you, like for a tour or something like that. You know, in retrospect, if I would have not flown, you're right. Like, what, two shows would have got canceled? You know what I mean? Like, in the scope of things, that's a pretty small event. You know what I mean? So.
Has any medical practitioner assured you that, look, like, this was bound to happen? Like, you can't blame it on that?
No, definitely not. Yeah, for sure. No one has been able to tell me why this happened or what has happened, to be honest. So.
Oh, that's got to be. Yeah. I couldn't. Well, I mean, all things considered, I think you're handling it quite well. I'm very resistant to change. or physical alteration on some level. Like, I know this about myself. I'm sure everyone is pretty much like that. No one really wants to feel like they're missing something that they had before, whether it's a sense or an appendage or whatever. But I got to say, I understand. I can't understand what you're going through, but I also can totally understand why you might be processing things the way you are.
Yeah, and it's not all bad. You know, with time, with anything, you know, you kind of get used to something as well, right? So So eventually you stop kind of just delaying or kind of reflecting too heavily, and you just kind of move forward, you know what I mean? And as you do that, things become a bit more normal. So I feel like I'm more in that part of this experience than I was, you know, say a year or a year and a half ago, kind of thing. So,
well, I also, I mean, I'm not trying to, I hope people aren't getting the wrong impression here. We've talked about how the record is imbued with this darkness on some level, but is also very accessible. And I actually hear flashes of humor, which I think are pretty subtle and sly. At one point, I remember kind of just sort of smiling to myself as I heard you reference Give Peace a Chance.
Right.
And I also, I mean, songs like Wasted Genius that are kind of counterbalanced by a later song called Imbecile Thoughts. There seems to be something going on there. Is there anything on the record that you've kind of placed there to kind of amuse yourself or the listener?
No, I don't think, I'm not a very clever person in general. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not, that's just not my forte. And so, Yeah, no, I nothing. Yeah, I just kind of took it song by song, and I, you know, there's no. I didn't try to inject any humor here and there. There might be some, you know, just because that's what happened to occur. But yeah, there was certainly no intention on that level.
Listen to some of these song titles. Jesus in the 70s.
Yeah, but literally. Go on, sorry.
I was also going to mention Babylonian Proclivities. Like, those to me are kind of funny, just in terms of words on a page or on your, you know, record player. Those are just kind of funny things to see.
Again, I agree, but they are humorous. But it's like I didn't think that out. That just kind of popped out. Like, it wasn't like this thing where I was just thinking about it. You know what I mean? Like, it just kind of came out of my mouth, and so that in that way it was not clever. Although it might in retrospect seem that way.
you seem very resistant to framing yourself as someone who would know what they're doing. In terms of,
well, that's the problem. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Things just kind of come out. Even like right now, in this garage, like I'm scoring a movie which I've never done before, and I'm just kind of hanging around hoping, you know, that like something comes up that will work for this film, right? So it's kind of not a great place to be, I think, actually.
Is this a creative device or impulse to kind of second guess yourself? Because, I mean, at this point, you're an experienced guy. A record label is behind you. This is your third album on Constellation. I mean, the people believe in you. You second guess yourself.
No, I don't think I'm second guessing myself. I just don't think that you can force that stuff. You know what I mean? And so I'm not one. I think some people can write songs in a way where they can be clever within the context of a song and be very intentional. I just don't think I'm really like that. Like, I guess, like, you know what I mean? Like, songs come out as they come out, and then you go in and kind of rejig them. But I think because I'm not the most clever of fellows, I don't get to have, I don't feel like I'm intentionally, you know, bringing humor to the plate. Although sometimes it happens to just happen, you know, it just happens because it just kind of comes out, you know what I mean? So
would you say there's no particular intention at all? Like, is there politics on this record? I mean, this is a reflection.
No, there's intention. Like, I feel like there's messages, but all I was trying to say was that there wasn't a lot of humor though. You know what I mean? But yeah, there's a lot of intention in how the songs are portrayed in terms of their arrangements and their structures and the tone of the songs, and also the lyrics as well. I guess I was just trying to say that I didn't bring a lot of humor to the table intentionally.
Is it insulting to you that I find things on your record to be funny?
Not at all. I think that's great. It's totally fine. Yeah.
What if you're,
you know, because everyone's gonna bring different things, find different things in different songs, right? So I think it's fine that, you know, whatever you see in it is great, and the same with anyone, right? So
yeah, I hear a kind of, I mean, and you've got different voices on the record too. I mean, I find that the way it's been framed, or rather the way it's been arranged and sort of put together is very thoughtful and clever, and there's all these little nice production nuances that I think people, as you live with the record more and more, things come out of it, of that experience. And I think it's required that you listen to this record closely to really figure it out. And I say figure it out, and I haven't figured it out. I'm not saying like it's a puzzle to figure out or something, but I feel like every time I revisit this record, I've learned something else about it, which is, I'm trying to pay you a compliment in a very rambly way.
That's great. No, that's amazing. Like, it certainly wasn't an easy record to make. Like, it to make the song sound the way that they ended up, like with all of those kind of intricacies that you're talking about, that took like a lot of, you know, kind of despairing about how things weren't the way that you wanted them to be, and then going in and, you know, tooling around and, you know, messing around until you finally got it to this perfect kind of level, in my opinion, right? Or different instruments at different places, or hitting at the right time, or whatever. It wasn't an easy thing to do. So
okay,
because in the past, I've made my records, so you know, you don't have to think about it. You just like, you're mixing it, your fingers on the fader or whatever, and then you stop when it sounds good. Like, you're not having a dialogue with yourself saying like, does it sound good there? Are you sure it's loud enough? Or, you know, whereas when someone else, which in this circumstance, other people were running the the, you know, the recording process and the mixing process. So then every time you wanted to bring, you know, an instrument down to like, say, an almost inaudible level, you know, you always, you know, the engineer would be bringing it down and saying, you sure you want to go lower than that? Like, you can't even hear it, the organ anymore. And you have to then have this dialogue, which can become, you know, you start second guessing yourself once you start saying things out loud. You know what I mean?
Right. So, right. Okay, well, I appreciate that window into it. Sort of in keeping with what I was asking about earlier, and I don't want to belabor this point about humor, but I'm just curious if you can tell us whether it's something to do with the recording process or within the record itself that's evident. What to you is the funniest aspect or backstory about this record?
The funniest aspect or backstory? I don't know.
There must be something that amused you about, or that you placed on the record just to amuse yourself. There must be something where you're like, that's kind of ridiculous. I'm just going to leave that in there.
Oh, yeah, I guess maybe. There's in the one song called Oval Window, there's like a scream at the, like, in, like, it goes, there's two parts, like the first part and then the outro part. And in between it, there's like me just kind of screaming like I'm a, like a woman in a horror film, like in Psycho, you know what I mean? Huh. It sounds, to me, it sounds kind of ridiculous. And when I first did the demo, it sounded more like a seagull. And I always wanted to try and get the seagull thing back, but it just never really worked out. So it sounds like a ridiculous falsetto man screaming in the shower. So that one, everyone wanted to take that off. And I was just like, eh, it's already there. It's kind of, it's funny, you know, it's not hurting anyone kind of thing. You know what I mean? So,
even though it sounds like someone's being hurt, but no one really got hurt in the making of that.
Yeah. And then another, I guess, one was there's a song called Violent Motion Pictures, and there's kind of an explosion at one point that, like a bomb dropping, that transfers you into the next section of the song. And I'd always just, you know, made the sound on demo. It's like, but I was at the studio and they had this little kind of like a fart machine, you know, it's like a little toy thing. You hit different buttons, it'll make like a fart sound or a window breaking, or it also had the bomb drop. But like the speaker's like literally like, you know, half of an inch wide. Mm-hmm. And so I just recorded it, you know, on my phone, or I don't know what it was, the bomb drop. And it sounded really wimpy. It didn't work. But then when I brought it home and like ran it through like an 8-track and put all this distortion on it, it all of a sudden had this sound of, you know, of like an actual like serious explosion. So even though it came out of this tiny little fart toy or whatever it was, so okay. That was kind of a funny moment as well, I suppose. So
that is funny. I'm going to listen for those. See, that's the kind of stuff I don't think, you know, we've talked about this record in a couple of, from a different a couple of different perspectives now, and I don't want to imply that it's all heavy. I think there's probably
There's funny moments throughout it for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. No, I just hadn't really thought about it in that context, I guess, so much. So
not many people probably ask you, tell me what's funny about your work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Make me laugh, clown. That's basically what I was saying there, which is weird. Do you, sitting back, away from the record now that it's been out a little while, and, I guess you're slightly, normally when an artist like yourself puts out a record, they begin to tour the record and then the songs strike them in whole new ways, and you haven't yet had that experience, I gather. So I'm just curious, based on everything we've discussed already and your own processing of the record, like, do you see a sort of thematic through line now between this thing? Is it basically a horror film, but about yourself in some way?
Through the record. I think, you know, I wouldn't say it's a horror film, but I would say it's a record, I think, of about, on some level, someone dealing with, you know, a problem that they can't solve, you know what I mean? Like, and that the kind of struggles or frustrations that might come along with that, you know. So,
but I mean, it's you. This is you.
Yeah,
and you know it. Like, you know, this is you. Are you on the other side of whatever you were going? I mean, you're obviously still, this health issue is lingering, but are you on the other side of the sort of mental anguish that sort of debilitated you?
I probably wouldn't say so. Unfortunately, no, I wouldn't say that. There, it's not like a rosy, there's not like a fairy tale ending, I don't think. Or if there is, I haven't gotten there yet. So, but yeah, it's just like a different phase, like I said, right? It's like there's the phase where you're really looking in, and then there's the part where you're kind of moving forward, right? And you're just kind of, you're like, okay, well, this is the thing that happened to me. So I guess this is who I am now. So I got to move through life in this capacity now. And so that's where I'm at right now. But yeah, like I wouldn't say it's like I've come to complete terms with what happened or what I deal with on a kind of day-to-day level or anything like that. But yeah, like making the record, I don't know if it was really cathartic. I think it was something I wanted to do. You know what I mean? Like you don't want something to stop you either, right? Like if I would have just like shut down when I flew sick, then I wouldn't have made this record. You know what I mean? And so it felt pretty important to me to see it through all the way. And kind of in a big way as well too. So
yeah, no, I hear you there. What is your next step, both personally, health wise, and I suppose what's going on with you and Siskiyou in the next little while? You mentioned the possibility of doing shows, but what else is going on?
Well, I'm like for the next few months, I'm scoring a film here. So it's a film. It's called The Happy Film, and it's a documentary, I guess, about happiness. And it's a film by this guy. His name is he's a designer from New York. His name's Stefan Sagmeister, and he's a pretty well known designer as far as that world goes. And so he did a big show called The Happy Show, which is like a big multimedia thing. I think it was in Toronto for a long time. And it travels around. And this is kind of the companion film to it. So it's like a feature-length documentary. And so they hired me to do all the music for it. So now I'm in this garage, and I've got it all set up with all of my equipment, and I'm just kind of starting in earnest to score it now. So it's kind of an unknown thing. So we'll see how that goes. And then, yeah, and then shows maybe in the summer. I don't know. I think my family, we're moving back to Ontario probably at the end of the summer. So, so who knows what's in store.
Well, that's great. Why? What's prompting you to move back?
I had a kid, a daughter about a year ago, and my wife is also from Ontario. And so, you know, at a certain point when all of your family is Ontario, I think that when you have a kid, I don't know if I guess you're from Ontario, right, Vish?
I'm from Ontario, but my wife is from Alberta, and yeah, we have these conversations all the time. Where are we going to live with these
kids?
Oh,
really? Okay, yeah. So yeah, like, so maybe that's a bit different than actually, but yeah. So like, you know, having a kid is hard. So you want to have some family around that so they can help out a little bit, but also you want your kid to know their cousins and their grandparents and all that stuff, right? So, and you know, no one's going to move out to us. Like we're kind of here. And also Vancouver is ridiculously expensive too. It's crazy. Like how much money is, I feel like I was immune to it because I lived in the same apartment for like 8 years. So the rent never went up. And then when I finally moved because we needed a bit more space, I was fairly shocked at how expensive rent was. Like it passed my ethical point where I feel comfortable paying rent. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Anyways.
What is it? Was it voted the most expensive city in the world or? To live, or?
I think it was like second most behind like Hong Kong or something like that. So
you live in the second most expensive place to live.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, you gotta get out of there. So where in Ontario would you be?
Yeah, I don't know. It really kind of depends. Like my wife's from up near Owen Sound, which I don't think we would really go there. I'm from down near Windsor. There's some like Detroit. There's lots of interesting things happening in Detroit. Toronto would be ideal, but Toronto feels really expensive as well now. So, you know, I feel like we've just said a thing. We're moving to Ontario. We're moving back to Ontario, but we don't actually have a plan about like exactly where we're going or, you know, we have a rough time when we're leaving. That's about all we have right now. So,
all right.
So that will probably change the dynamics of this, this band for sure. Cause you know, a couple of the members are, you know, permanent residents of Vancouver. So,
yeah, that I can see why that would be certainly why that would be an issue. Well, that's it's great. I mean, there's lots of great drummers in Ontario, and I'm sure you'll find someone to play with.
Yeah. I'll give you a call when I show up.
Yeah, why not? I like the band a lot. No, I'm just, I didn't mean to insinuate myself into your band, but I am a fan, so it's great. I want to tell folks that the latest album by Siskiyou is Nervous. It's great. It's out now via Constellation Records, and you can learn more about it at CSTRecords.com. Now, Colin, is there a song in particular from the album that we can feature now and let people check out?
Yeah, for sure. I like... I think Wasted Genius is a good kind of well-rounded song for most people to hear.
Okay, it's a well-rounded song.
It's not too far out there. It's not too far in there. You know what I mean? It's kind of, I think it encapsulates the record, you know, all the different aspects of the record on some level. So
do you have particular like pop inspirations, like a rock inspirations, I guess? I was trying to pin down where some of these sounds, what they reminded me of. And there was, with every song, I'm kind of all over the place.
Well, I mean, like groups that are large, big pop groups that I really like. You know, I feel like growing up, I always listened to the Smiths a lot. So that was always like a big, that's kind of constant in my life, I think, and has been for, you know, 20 years. So.
And that explains the similarity between How Soon Is Now and I think it's Bank Accounts and Dollar Bills, maybe.
Oh, do you see a similarity in those two?
Which one has the slide? Is it that one?
Yeah.
Totally reminds, every time it comes on, I'm like, this totally sounds like How Soon Is Now.
That's interesting. I've never, I'll have to go back and listen.
I didn't mean to ruin your own record for you.
No, that's great. Sometimes it's, because I, you know, that's funny. Because I know there's another pop song that song, if you boil it down to its core, it's very similar to as well. That's more popular than the Smiths for sure. So
okay, I'm gonna think about that one too. All right, so and is there, okay, that's fine. I don't want you to go too far into it. I was just trying to, like, are you a Sparkle Horse fan? Do you got, like, is there anything like that?
Oh, never listened to Sparkle Horse in my life.
Flaming Lips.
Flaming Lips, I love, yeah. Like, the Flaming Lips, I don't really listen to them as much now, but there was a time where, like, you know, like, one of my favorite records is the Zyreka, that record with the four CDs that you have to play at once. That had a big thing in my life, yeah. I'm definitely have been a huge Flaming Lips fan, for sure. Yeah,
I feel like that's got to be the new T-shirt. I used to listen to the Flaming Lips. I feel like everyone's...
actually, maybe I can sell that to them. That's an idea.
I feel like everyone's abandoning that ship.
You think so, really?
I think the more people hear, yeah, I just think people are a bit off put by Wayne Coyne, and there's lots of drama there and gross. Yeah, it seems to be getting weird.
Yeah, I don't know. Growing up, like, as in my, you know, 20s and stuff, they were a great rock band, and then went into a weird, great, amazing experimental phase. And now they feel a little, yeah, I just, no, I'm not as connected to the music that they make anymore. You know what I mean? So.
I think this seems like a nice segue into dedicating this song to Wayne Coyne. This is Wasted Genius.
Awesome.
By Siskiyou. Colin, thank you for the chat, and I wish you the best of luck with everything.
Great. Thanks, Vish.
I am aware. never notice it. You never notice it. Then I only notice it.
Thanks again for checking out Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can email me about the show at creativecontrol933@gmail.com. That's creative with a K, control with a K, 933@gmail.com. You can also follow our Twitter at Vish Creative, VishKreative. And you can also like our Facebook page. A version of this show airs on CFRU in Guelph every Wednesday at noon Eastern. And you can listen to that online at cfru.ca, or if you're in the KW region, at 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also sign up for the weekly mailing list for the podcast and the show at vishkhanna.com, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I believe that is everything I wanted to tell you. Thank you once again.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.